There are 365 beaches on the twin island nation of Antigua and Barbuda, one for every day of the year, the locals like to say. But to truly understand this place, you have to step off the sand and into its stories. Beneath the Caribbean sun lies a layered heritage, a world shaped by sugar plantations and emancipation, shipyards and sound systems, West African roots and English colonial past. From the narrow alleys of St. John's to the sweeping pink sands of Barbuda, this is a land that speaks in rhythm, spice, and stone. Here, food is history you can taste. Festivals are more than spectacle, their memory in motion. And every quiet cove or weather-worn windmill whispers of centuries that came before. This is not just a tropical escape. It's a living archive of Caribbean culture. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1, Land, Legacy, and Liberation. Antigua rises out of the sea like a green parchment folded by time, its jagged coastlines etched by salt and coral, its rolling hills soft with bush and memory. Barbuda, its lesser-known sibling to the north, is flatter and quieter, fringed in pink-hued sands and guarded by a magnificent colony of frigate birds. Together, these two islands form the independent nation of Antigua and Barbuda, small in scale, vast in cultural depth. Their story begins long before European contact. The first known inhabitants were the Siboney, followed by the Arawak and Carib peoples, who navigated by starlight and harvested the land's natural abundance. Archaeological findings reveal cassava griddles, stone tools, and petroglyphs etched into volcanic rock, evidence of lives intimately tied to the earth and sea. Then came the storm of empire. The British arrived in the 1600s, and Antigua, with its deep natural harbors, soon became a linchpin in the Atlantic sugar economy. Slavery was introduced on a brutal scale, with enslaved Africans forced to labor in the cane fields under the fierce sun. Barbuda, meanwhile, was used as a provisioning island. Its population, largely the descendants of those brought to sustain the colonial machine. But there was resistance. To visit by boat is to glide through hushed waters where nature remains sovereign. Local guides steer skiffs through the lagoon, offering quiet commentary and deep respect. The sanctuary is more than a wildlife haven. It's a living classroom, a reminder of what the Caribbean once was and what it still can be. Barbudans are protective of this ecosystem, and rightly so. After Hurricane Irma devastated the island in 2017, rebuilding efforts sparked conflict between those advocating large-scale tourism development and those committed to preserving communal land and ecological balance. For many residents, the lagoon isn't just a bird sanctuary. It's a symbol of sovereignty. The Fisherman's Code, before tourism, before yachts and cruise ships, Antigua and Barbuda lived by the sea schedule. In the fishing villages of Parham, Crab Hill, and Old Road, the same rhythms endure. Wooden boats are still pushed into the surf by hand. Nets are mended in the shade of almond trees. Fishermen share early morning coffee before heading out, then trade their catch along jetties and roadside stalls. Lobster, red snapper, conch, wahoo, and dolphin fish, mahi-mahi, form the backbone of local diets and economic survival. The sea is generous, but not inexhaustible. Overfishing and reef degradation have become increasing concerns, and many communities now participate in sustainable harvesting practices. The older generation speaks of seasons when fish were so plentiful they leapt into the boats. The younger generation is learning that stewardship matters. Even in modern kitchens and seafood festivals, respect for the ocean remains a constant. Fish is grilled, not wasted. Bones are used for broth. Conch is cleaned by hand and often shared among neighbors. Coral kingdoms and reefs in peril. Beneath the surface lies a world as rich as the one above. Cades Reef, Green Island, and Galley Bay are home to vibrant coral gardens, sea turtles, and shoals of reef fish. Snorkelers drift above swaying sea fans. Divers explore coral caverns and historic wrecks, some dating back to the 18th century. But this beauty is fragile. Rising sea temperatures, acidification, and careless anchoring have bleached once vivid reefs. Conservation groups have begun reef restoration projects, growing coral in underwater nurseries, educating boaters, and creating marine protected zones. Here, too, the past offers guidance. Indigenous Carib and Arawak peoples once fished in balance with seasonal rhythms, taking only what was needed. That ethos is returning, slowly but surely, as ecotourism and cultural heritage initiatives gain traction. Ports of passage Antigua and Barbuda have always been crossroads. The sea brought colonizers, yes, but also trade, ideas, resistance. The islands have seen pirates and privateers, sugar ships and slave schooners, missionaries and migrants. Today, cruise ports and marinas hum with a different kind of traffic. Yet even as modernity docks alongside tradition, the sea continues to whisper its ancient truths. You can hear it in the lapping tide at Runaway Beach. You can feel it in the salt that crusts your skin after a swim in Half Moon Bay. And if you stay long enough, really stay, you might come to understand what the sea has always known, that memory drifts, that culture is fluid, and that no island stands alone. Chapter 5, Trails, Ruins, and the Living Past. The Caribbean sun may bleach the hills of Antigua golden, and the winds may sweep across Barbuda's open plains. But beneath that light and breeze lie heavy footprints, centuries deep. In Antigua and Barbuda, history doesn't sleep in textbooks or museums alone. It lives in the hills, the ruins, the walking trails, and the weather-worn architecture. The past is not distant here. It is present. Breathing softly beneath the roots of silk cotton trees or etched into the stone walls of abandoned plantations. To explore this place is to walk through layers. Indigenous settlements, colonial forts, the scars of sugar, and the echoes of emancipation. Where stone speaks, Betty's hope. On Antigua's eastern side, framed by rustling cane grass and blue sky, two stone windmill towers rise from the fields. This is Betty's Hope, the first large-scale sugar plantation on the island, established in 1651 by the British and operated with enslaved African labor for over two centuries. The name, deceptively gentle, belies a brutal legacy. At its height, Betty's Hope was the center of industrial agriculture, producing thousands of pounds of sugar annually. But it also depended on the lives and labor of hundreds of enslaved men, women, and children whose names rarely made it into the colonial record. Today, what remains is a site of quiet reckoning. The twin windmills, one of which has been partially restored, stand as sentinels. A small interpretation center offers context, but the real power of the place comes from walking its grounds, standing where cane was crushed, where overseers watched from verandas, where resistance simmered. Betty's Hope isn't a ruin, it's a reminder, and for many, It is a sacred space where the pain of history is acknowledged, not hidden. Forts of resistance and control. Antigua's topography is ringed with forts, over 40 of them, built by the British to guard against pirates, rival empires, and uprising. Many now lie in ruin, vines creeping through cracked stone. But their stories endure. Fort James, guarding the harbor near St. John's, was constructed in the 1700s and still holds its original cannons, pointed out to sea. It offers not only a glimpse into military architecture, but sweeping views of the coastline, reminding visitors why control of these waters once mattered so deeply. Further inland, high above English Harbor, lies Shirley Heights, a former military lookout and barracks. Named after Governor Thomas Shirley, the fort was designed to give the British a clear view of potential attacks. Today, its views are famous for a different reason, sunset. On Sunday evenings, locals and visitors gather at Shirley Heights for live steel pan, barbecue, and dancing. It is celebration atop a colonial relic, joy and memory coexisting in the same space. Nearby, the Monk's Hill Trail leads to Fort George, an 18th century structure now in partial ruin. The hike is steep and shaded, winding through native bush and flowering shrubs. And at the summit, the remains of stone barracks overlook Falmouth Harbor and beyond. It's a place of silence where the wind carries more than breeze. It carries time. The indigenous imprint. Long before forts and plantations, these islands were home to the Arawak and Carib peoples. Evidence of their presence still emerges from the soil. Pottery shards, stone tools, burial sites, and petroglyphs, carvings left on stone surfaces, often near water sources. Barbuda in particular preserves traces of this early habitation. The Highland House, ruins once the estate of the Codrington family, who leased Barbuda from the British Crown, sit near Indian Cave, a sacred site etched with ancient markings. Step inside the limestone cavern and you'll see faint depictions, human-like figures, geometric shapes, whose meanings are still debated, but their age and placement suggest spiritual or ritual use. The air inside the cave is cool, still charged. It is not a tourist stop. It is a threshold between past and present. St. John's, memory in architecture. In the capital city of St. John's, history pulses through its streets. Colonial era buildings with wooden fretwork and pastel paint lean into narrow lanes. Market vendors shout beneath arcades built in the 1800s. And at the city's crest stands St. John's Cathedral, its twin white towers gleaming against the sky. Originally constructed in 1683 and rebuilt twice after earthquakes, the cathedral is a masterwork of Baroque design. Its wood and stucco construction, both elegant and engineered for seismic resilience. Inside, the scent of wood polish mixes with centuries of prayer. Marble tablets along the walls commemorate governors and clergymen. But the real story lies in the pews, generations of Antiguans who baptized, married, and buried their loved ones beneath this roof. Redcliffe Quay, once a bustling hub of slave trade and merchant activity, is now home to boutiques and cafes. Yet the cobblestones beneath your feet are original. They remember a time when ships unloaded not just goods, but lives. Walking as witness. There's a growing movement on the islands to reconnect people with the land, not just recreationally, but historically. Walking trails are being mapped, oral histories collected, and old plantation roads reopened, not to glorify the past, but to confront it. One such initiative, led by local educators and historians, involves memory walks, guided explorations through former estates where descendants of enslaved people share stories passed down in their families. These walks aren't theatrical, they are meditative. Along the way, you learn to see differently, to notice the layout of an estate, the purpose of a chimney, the location of water catchments, the absence of names on maps. There's a quiet dignity to this kind of tourism. It doesn't seek spectacle, it seeks understanding. To walk the trails of Antigua and Barbuda is to walk through time. The stones, the trees, the wind, they all remember. These aren't ruins for ruin's sake. They are lessons in resilience, architecture of both oppression and survival. And the past here is not a distant echo. It is a living companion, guiding, haunting, and, in many ways, still healing. Chapter 6, Craft, Community, and the Cultural Mosaic. If the Caribbean were a tapestry, Antigua and Barbuda would be a tightly woven thread, vivid, resilient, and textured by the labor and creativity of its people. In this twin island nation, culture isn't stored behind glass or printed in guidebooks. It's worn on market day. It's played on steel drums under almond trees. It's told in riddles around the dinner table and painted on shop fronts along dusty roads. To understand Antigua and Barbuda is to listen, not just to the history, but to the hum of daily life. This is a place where tradition is still practiced, not preserved. And every community, from the capital's markets to Barbuda's beachside workshops, plays its part in crafting a living cultural mosaic. The language of craft. Step into any village market, say, in All Saints or Bolins, and you'll find culture displayed in woven baskets, Madras cloth dolls, seed jewelry, and hand-stitched quilts. These crafts are more than souvenirs. They are vessels of memory. The Madras fabric, in particular, is iconic. Its plaid patterns and bold colors are rooted in Indian textile design, brought to the Caribbean via colonial trade routes. But in Antigua, Madras is transformed. Tailors cut it into ceremonial wear for Independence Day. Grandmothers pass it down as heirlooms. Seamstresses infuse it into contemporary fashion, giving new voice to old patterns. Basket weaving, once a purely functional skill, is undergoing a quiet revival. Local artisans, often older women, gather materials from the bush, screw pine, mauve bark, and silver palm. Their hands work quickly, but with reverence, recalling techniques taught by their own mothers and grandmothers. Some baskets are used for gathering produce. Others hold cassava bread. Still others become art, sold at festivals and exported abroad. Every stitch, every weave is a story told in thread and fiber. The rhythm of resistance music in Antigua and Barbuda isn't just entertainment. It's a mode of expression, of resistance, of joy. It's how the islands speak. Steel pan, perhaps the most celebrated local sound, began in neighboring Trinidad, but has found a fervent home here. In villages and schools, young players gather in panyards, practicing late into the night. These spaces are part rehearsal hall, part community hub, where elders pass down songs and stories alongside technique. Antigua's Hell's Gate Steel Orchestra, one of the oldest in the world, has been performing since the 1940s. Their music echoes across carnival grounds, churches, and concert halls. Each performance is more than a melody. It is memory turned to rhythm. Then there's calypso and soca, musical forms that blend satire, politics, romance, and community pride. During carnival, competitions like the Calypso Monarch and Soca Monarch showcase not just vocal talent, but lyrical ingenuity. Singers act as poets, comedians and prophets, giving voice to the voiceless and calling out corruption with a smile. Foodways as folk art. In many households, the kitchen is a stage. Recipes, passed down orally, are performed daily. And like craft or song, cooking here is an art form tied to place, season, and community. Communal cooking remains central. On weekends, families often gather for cook-ups, shared meals of seasoned rice, pigtail stew, or saltfish with dukana. The food may be simple, but the ritual is layered, a collaborative act of memory and sustenance. Markets, too, are cultural theaters. Vendors don't just sell produce, they narrate. A conversation about tamarind pulp becomes a lesson in ancestry. A debate over the best seasoning peppers leads to impromptu cooking advice. At every turn, culture unfolds, slowly, generously, like a pot of pepper pot on the stove. Community as canvas. Culture here isn't confined to individual expression. It's held collectively. Villages often organize around community centers, churches, and schools, where festivals and ceremonies serve to reinforce bonds. In Antigua, village pride runs deep. A young boy from Liberta might know his local cricket team's entire history. A girl from Pigots might sing in the school choir, her voice shaped by generations of hymnals and folk tunes. Barbudans, with their communal land ownership and tight-knit society, often gather under the open sky for story circles, music jams, or simply to share food, no occasion necessary. And then there are the island's many village festivals, smaller than carnival, but no less meaningful. These events often center around a saint's feast day, a historical date, or the harvest. Booths line the roads, music fills the air, and elders tell stories late into the night. It's culture, in its most immediate, unvarnished form, shared, lived, and felt. Art as ancestry Antigua and Barbuda's visual art scene is growing steadily, with painters, sculptors, and mixed-media artists drawing on both traditional motifs and contemporary themes. Artists like Mark Brown and Heather Dorham, who also designed the national costume, explore identity, spirituality, and environment in their work. Their canvases pulse with island colors, sunburnt oranges, seafoam blues, dusky greens, and often feature symbolic references to African heritage, colonial legacy, and Caribbean resilience. In galleries and studios, young creatives are experimenting with digital art, photography, and performance, pushing boundaries while grounding their work in the stories of their elders. One artist we met, a woman named Celia, crafts collages from old family photographs, bits of madras, and found objects from ruined sugar estates. "I don't make art for tourists," she says. "I make it to remember and to remind. Education as inheritance." A key pillar of cultural preservation is education, not just formal schooling, but intergenerational transmission. In many homes, grandparents play a central role. They teach dialect proverbs. "What's sweet in goat mouth does sour in he belly," tell Anansi tales, and remind children of the sacrifices that earned them their freedom. Schools, meanwhile, increasingly incorporate cultural heritage into curricula, teaching students local folk songs, history from a Caribbean perspective, and the significance of Emancipation Day. In both Antigua and Barbuda, efforts are growing to document oral traditions, archive music, and support cultural literacy. It's a race against time, but one the islands are determined to win. Culture in Antigua and Barbuda is not frozen. It evolves, but it evolves with care, with a sense of where it came from and who it serves. Every drumbeat, every stitch, every shared story is part of a larger fabric. Not decorative, not nostalgic, necessary. It binds the islands together. It reminds the people who they are. And in a rapidly changing world, that reminder is its own kind of power. Chapter 7, Reflection, Resilience, and the Future of the Islands. Antigua and Barbuda may seem small on the map, dots in a sea of blue, but their story spans centuries and speaks louder than their size suggests. These islands are not static. They are in motion, always adapting, always remembering, always imagining what comes next. To visit is to be welcomed, but to listen deeply, to walk the hills and coastlines, to eat the food and hear the music, that is to witness a people in conversation with their past and in negotiation with their future. As we reach the final chapter of this journey, one truth becomes clear. Antigua and Barbuda are defined not by what has happened to them, but by what they've done with what's happened. A nation forged by emancipation. It begins and in many ways continues with freedom. The legacy of slavery and colonial rule is embedded in the sugar mills and the street names. But what's more powerful is how that legacy has been met with carnival, with protest songs, with education, with storytelling. Every year on Emancipation Day and during carnival, the people affirm what previous generations fought for: the right to dance, to speak, to own land, to tell their own story. In a world that too often tries to flatten Caribbean identity into tourist brochures, Antigua and Barbuda insist on complexity. This is a nation forged in the crucible of injustice, but tempered by community and creativity. Barbuda's quiet stand. Barbuda's story is quieter, but just as profound. Its people live by a communal land system that dates back to post-slavery inheritance patterns, where no individual owns land outright, but everyone belongs to it. After Hurricane Irma struck in 2017, flattening nearly every structure on the island, Barbudans were faced not only with rebuilding homes, but with defending their cultural model. Outside developers and government proposals threatened to shift the landscape, introducing private ownership where none had existed before. The debates continue. But so does the resistance. Barbudans have fought for their communal rights in courts and on the global stage. Their stance is not simply political, it's ancestral. It is a belief that land, like memory, should be shared, not sold. This small island has become a case study in global discussions about climate justice, sustainable tourism, and indigenous land rights. Barbuda reminds us that progress must never come at the cost of identity. Rising. Waters. Rising voices. Like many Caribbean nations, Antigua and Barbuda face rising sea levels, coral bleaching, and more extreme storm patterns. Climate change isn't a theory here. It's a fact, written in receding coastlines and altered planting seasons. Yet the islands are not passive victims. Local initiatives are leading reef restoration projects, planting mangroves, and educating fishermen on sustainable practices. Youth activists speak at international conferences. Farmers experiment with drought-resistant crops. And culturally, there is a growing consciousness, especially among young people, that preservation isn't just about ecology. It's about language, ritual, foodways, and music. To protect the land and sea is to protect the soul of the islands. Culture as compass. Looking forward, Antigua and Barbuda are charting a future rooted in heritage. Cultural education is expanding. The arts are gaining institutional support. There's a push to document oral histories, preserve endangered dialects, and archive carnival traditions for generations to come, entrepreneurs are embracing culture-forward tourism, inviting visitors not just to sunbathe, but to learn. Cooking classes, village festivals, artisan markets, eco-tours, these are becoming the new front lines of cultural preservation. And in a world racing toward homogeneity, this emphasis on distinctiveness is more than branding. It's survival. As one Antiguan historian put it, we are not here to be rediscovered. We are here to be remembered properly. The gift of the journey. For those who come to Antigua and Barbuda with curiosity, not just as tourists, but as learners, the reward is profound. You begin to see how land holds memory, how cuisine carries history, how rhythm becomes resilience, how identity is built not only from freedom gained, but from the refusal to forget what it cost. You see that the sea, which once brought enslaved Africans, now connects their descendants to a global diaspora. That the hills where plantations once stood now grow gardens and music schools. That ruins don't always mean decay. Sometimes they mean return. And that in the laughter of children, the sizzle of fish on a roadside grill, the beat of steel pan under moonlight, there is continuity. In the end, Antigua and Barbuda are not just destinations. They are declarations. Declarations of endurance, of joy, of sovereignty, of story. To know these islands is to witness a people who remember where they come from and insist on shaping where they're going. They are not simply survivors, they are stewards. And their journey, like their music, like their waters, is far from over. Quiet, often invisible, but persistent. Runaway communities formed in the interior, religious gatherings doubled as subversive councils, and when Britain abolished slavery in 1834, Antigua stood apart from many of its neighbors. The transition was immediate, not phased. Formerly enslaved people were legally free, though the road to true equality would stretch on for generations. The legacies of those centuries are written across the island's landscapes. In Antigua's southeast stands Nelson's Dockyard, the only remaining Georgian-era naval dockyard still in use today. Once a key British base during the Napoleonic Wars, it now serves as both a UNESCO World Heritage Site and a testament to colonial maritime ambition. Nearby, the rusted stone chimneys and mill towers of long-abandoned plantations punctuate the hills, their silence bearing witness to lives lost, labor extracted, wealth exported. But Antigua and Barbuda are not defined solely by what was taken. They are also defined by what has been preserved and reimagined. Community, creativity, and cultural pride continue to animate daily life. And perhaps no celebration embodies this more than Carnival. Held every year in late July and early August, Antigua's Carnival isn't just a parade, it's a reclamation. Originating in 1957 as a tribute to the emancipation of enslaved people, Carnival layers masquerade, calypso, soca, and steel pan into a moving, joyful monument to survival and self-expression. The colors, the costumes, the music, each is a coded language, linking the past with the present. Even outside of Carnival, the islands beat with cultural rhythms. In the back streets of St. John's, drum circles and string bands keep old forms alive. Oral traditions pass down proverbs, riddles, and histories from grandparent to child. Language, too, carries memory. While English is the official tongue, the lilting Antiguan Creole, spiced with West African syntax and Caribbean rhythm, is a living linguistic archive. And then there is Barbuda, a place whose quietude belies its strength. Still largely owned communally by Barbudans themselves, the island has long resisted external pressures to privatize its land. This communal stewardship reflects a different relationship to place, one rooted not in profit, but in protection. After Hurricane Irma devastated Barbuda in 2017, residents faced not only physical rebuilding, but political struggles over land rights and development. That tension remains. But so too does the will of the people. As we stand on the edge of this story, looking inland from the coast, it becomes clear. Antigua and Barbuda are more than picturesque destinations. They are living ecosystems of memory, shaped by wind and willpower, by sea currents and social movements. Their terrain holds the imprints of history, not just in stone and soil, but in spirit. In the chapters ahead, we'll trace these contours more closely through foodways, festivals, sacred sites, and sailing routes. We'll meet the artisans, cooks, musicians, and storytellers who keep culture alive not as a museum piece, but as a way of life. Because in the Caribbean, and especially here, culture doesn't sit still. It dances. It drums. It cooks over open flame. It wears feathers and sings truth to power. It waits patiently in the curl of a wave or the hush of a breeze for those who care to listen. Chapter 2, Foodways and Flavors of a Creole Kitchen. To understand a place, you must taste it. In Antigua and Barbuda, food is not simply sustenance. It is history simmered, struggle seasoned, and identity served on a plate. The island's cuisine is born from movement, the forced migrations of enslaved Africans, the European colonial influences, and the enduring ties to the land and sea. What emerges is not just fusion. It is resilience made edible. The national dish, fungi and pepper pot. Ask any Antiguan what dish defines their culture, and the answer comes without hesitation. Fungi and pepper pot. Fungi, pronounced fungi, is a humble yet essential cornmeal-based side, closely related to polenta, but steamed and stirred to a firm, elastic texture. It's the kind of dish born out of necessity, affordable, filling, and able to stretch a small amount of stew to feed a family. The stew it accompanies, pepper pot, is something else entirely. Rich, deep, and unapologetically spicy, pepper pot is a dense blend of okra, eggplant, spinach, salted meats, and aromatic herbs. Rooted in West African traditions and shaped by plantation-era scarcity, this dish tells a story of ingenuity, of using what's available and elevating it through technique, time, and spice. In rural kitchens, pepper pot is often a weekend meal, its preparation a kind of ritual. Grandmothers stir the bubbling pot slowly, adding ingredients in rhythm with memory. Every family claims their version is the best. They're probably right. A culinary calendar food in Antigua and Barbuda isn't static. It shifts with the seasons, with festivals, with what the sea brings in, and the market's layout. A walk through the St. John's Public Market in the early morning is a lesson in local biodiversity. Heaps of cassava, breadfruit, yams, ginger, tamarind, Scotch bonnet peppers, and the famed Antigua black pineapple, arguably the sweetest variety in the world. On Fridays and Saturdays, grills appear by the roadside. Smoke rises from jerk pits. You'll find jerk chicken, of course, and grilled snapper seasoned with garlic, lime, and thyme. But also lesser-known delicacies, conch fritters, goat water stew, and saltfish with ducana. A pairing of salted cod with a sweet dumpling made from grated sweet potato, coconut, and nutmeg, wrapped in banana leaves and steamed until fragrant. These are dishes that come from struggle and celebration in equal measure. Saltfish, for instance, was once colonial ration, cheap preserved fish shipped in from abroad to feed enslaved workers. Today, it is beloved, reclaimed, and elevated in every kitchen from the capital to countryside villages. Then there's Dukana, wrapped in memory as much as in banana leaf. It's often prepared for Sunday lunch or during festivals. Its preparation, a family affair, with children helping to grate the sweet potato, while elders debate how much spice is too much. From kettle to carnival food is a centerpiece in every Antiguan festival. During carnival, stalls line the streets, selling everything from corn soup and souse, a pickled pork delicacy, to rum cakes and homemade ginger beer. The act of eating becomes social, celebratory, performative even, and yet there's always a reverence beneath the revelry. Food here is tied to memory. Elders recall cooking over coal pots in their youth. Community cookups were more than meals. They were gatherings of resistance, of storytelling, of passing down secrets. Even the drinks carry heritage. Locally brewed sorrel wine, made from the petals of the hibiscus flower, is served during Christmas time, alongside rich black cake soaked in rum and fruit. The island's Cavalier rum, distilled in Antigua for generations, is another cultural marker, used not just in cocktails, but in cooking, medicine, and ritual. Culinary Renaissance. In recent years, Antigua and Barbuda have witnessed a quiet culinary renaissance. Young chefs trained abroad are returning home, blending global techniques with traditional recipes. There's pride in sourcing local, fresh goat, wild thyme, sea cat, octopus, and sweet potato. Restaurants are now putting fine dining spins on old classics without losing the soul of the dish. Take the case of a chef named Akeem, who runs a small bistro outside of English Harbor. His menu features plantain gnocchi, coconut jerk lamb, and grilled lionfish, an invasive species turned sustainable delicacy. For him, the goal isn't fusion, it's evolution. "I'm not trying to make French food Caribbean," he says. "I'm making Caribbean food speak louder." Meanwhile, in Barbuda, cooking remains deeply traditional. The island's slower pace is reflected in its kitchens. Meals are often caught, cleaned, and cooked within the same hour. Fish is grilled on open fire. Baked Johnny cakes are made fresh with each batch. And nearly every recipe, no matter how old, is remembered by heart. Food as archive. To eat in Antigua and Barbuda is to participate in a living archive. Recipes are oral records, flavors are timestamps, and ingredients carry with them histories of survival, adaptation, and community. You'll find that even the humblest dish, boiled green banana, cassava bread, rice and peas, carries within it centuries of migration, colonization, creolization, and reclamation. Each bite is layered, and each table, whether at a five-star hotel or a family's backyard, is a place of cultural dialogue. In the end, cuisine here isn't just about taste. It's about telling a story. And in Antigua and Barbuda, that story is still unfolding, one plate at a time. Chapter 3, Festivals, Faith in the Island Spirit. On the surface, festivals in Antigua and Barbuda are a feast for the senses, color, rhythm, and movement pouring through the streets. But beneath the sequins and steel pan lies something deeper, a spiritual energy, a cultural compass that binds past to present, faith to festivity, ancestry to art. This is not merely a place that celebrates, it's a place that remembers through dance, through drum, through rituals born from resistance and joy. The soul of carnival. Carnival, in Antigua, is not just an event. It's a cultural performance of memory. Held each year from late July into early August, the 13-day celebration honors emancipation, the 1834 abolition of slavery in the British Empire, and the continued fight for cultural expression and identity. Carnival's roots trace back to masquerade traditions brought by enslaved Africans who used song, satire, and costume to lampoon colonial powers. These early forms of celebration evolved into jouvert, from the French jour ouvert, meaning daybreak. The unofficial start of carnival, held in the small hours of the morning, where paint-smeared bodies dance behind mobile steel bands in the first light of dawn. It is a joyful chaos, a kind of spiritual cleansing. As carnival unfolds, it showcases every layer of Antiguan society. There's the queen show, where women compete not only in beauty, but in intellect and cultural awareness. There's the Calypso Monarch competition, where singers weave wit, protest, and poetry into their lyrics, tackling everything from local politics to global injustice. Then there's Soca Monarch, the high-energy counterpart that prizes rhythm, crowd control, and unfiltered exuberance. Performers leap across the stage, backed by blaring horns and thudding bass, commanding audiences with refrains that are equal parts anthem and invocation. And of course, Grand Parade Day, where masqueraders in feathered, beaded, larger-than-life costumes march through St. John's. Each troupe tells a story, some drawn from folklore, others from contemporary headlines. The visual language of carnival is symbolic: red for strength, gold for divinity, green for the land, black for the people's resilience. It's more than entertainment. It's theater with historical consciousness. It's freedom made visible. Beyond the streets, faith and folklore. Yet celebration in Antigua and Barbuda isn't only found in spectacle. It's also woven into the quiet rituals of everyday faith. The islands are predominantly Christian, with Anglicanism as the historical cornerstone due to colonial legacy. On Sundays, the bells of St. John's Cathedral ring out across the capital, summoning worshipers to its twin-spired grandeur. The church, first built in the 1680s and reconstructed after earthquakes, sits on a hill like a sentinel, watching centuries unfold. But look closer, and you'll find a spiritual landscape far more complex. Pentecostal churches brim with song and testimony. Seventh-day Adventists maintain strict Sabbath observance. Moravian and Methodist congregations echo with hymns born in resistance. Alongside formal religion, there's a quieter spiritual undercurrent, a Caribbean cosmology shaped by African, Amerindian, and Christian influences. In rural areas and among elders, stories persist of spirits that dwell in silk cotton trees, of duppies, ghosts that wander crossroads, of herbal healers whose knowledge of plants is passed from grandmother to granddaughter. Even carnival itself carries traces of spiritual practice. The devil costumes, the fire eaters, the painted bodies at jouvert. These aren't just theatrics. They echo Yoruba traditions, Afro-Caribbean rituals, and a belief that the spiritual world walks alongside the living, especially in moments of great celebration. Days of devotion and national pride beyond carnival, the Antiguan calendar is dotted with sacred and civic observances that fuse reverence with national pride. Independence Day, celebrated on November 1st, marks the nation's full sovereignty from Britain in 1981. But the week leading up to it feels more like a cultural harvest. Schools host national dress days, parades highlight traditional arts, and villages decorate with the colors of the flag, red, black, blue, white, and gold, each symbolizing sacrifice, strength, hope, and sunshine. There's also Emancipation Day on August 1st, a solemn and celebratory remembrance of freedom hard won. For some, it's a day of church services and reflection. For others, it's marked with music, storytelling, and ancestral honorings. And in Barbuda, the quieter rhythms of island life are punctuated by deeply rooted communal traditions. After Hurricane Irma, residents began reviving old festivals, land-based celebrations that affirm collective identity in the face of external pressures. In these observances, one sees the quiet thread running through Antiguan and Barbudan culture, a fierce sense of belonging. The cultural keepers. At the heart of it all are the keepers of memory, the griots, the musicians, the craftspeople, the elders. In the village of Libertà, a retired teacher hosts weekly story circles where children learn folk tales about Anansi the spider, the clever trickster from West Africa. In the panyards, multi-generational steel bands practice late into the night for carnival competitions. In backyard workshops, craftspeople make dolls dressed in Madras fabric or fashion jewelry from seeds and shells. These are the quiet guardians of the island spirit. Their work isn't always televised or recorded, but it is vital. They pass down not only skills, but values, community, creativity, perseverance, humor. And they remind us that culture is not static. It's alive, it breathes, and it adapts. In Antigua and Barbuda, celebration is not escapism. It is expression. Faith is not doctrine. It is a daily rhythm, a shared breath, a reminder that survival is sacred. And festivals, whether raucous or reverent, are less about spectacle than they are about identity, lived, remembered, and reimagined. So when the drums sound and the streets swell, or when the pews fill and candles flicker, know this: something ancient is being honored, and something new is always being born. Chapter 4, Sea, Sail, and Saltwater Legacies. The Caribbean has always been defined by water. For Antigua and Barbuda, the sea is not simply a backdrop. It is a lifeline, a legacy, and a library of stories told by waves. From coral-fringed bays to legendary regattas, from the call of conch divers to the echoes of British naval power, the sea has shaped everything: geography, economy, culture, and even character. It feeds, connects, isolates, and inspires. And nowhere is that saltwater soul more evident than in the island's enduring relationship with sailing. A harbor of history, Nelson's Dockyard. To walk through English Harbor on Antigua's southern coast is to step into living maritime history. Here lies Nelson's Dockyard, a UNESCO World Heritage Site and the only operational Georgian naval dockyard in the world. Its limestone and brick buildings once housed the Royal Navy's Caribbean fleet, and in the 1780s, it was the command post of a young Horatio Nelson, later the famed Admiral of Trafalgar. But this dockyard tells more than a colonial story. It tells of labor, of enslaved Africans who built the sea walls, hauled stones, and maintained British dominance, of local shipwrights, craftsmen, and mariners whose skills ensured that schooners and sloops remained seaworthy in rough Atlantic waters. Today, the dockyard is a vibrant blend of past and present. Yachts from around the world anchor in its basin. Restoration efforts have preserved its clock tower, sail loft, and officers' quarters. And nearby, Fort Berkeley's wind-battered ruins offer sweeping views of turquoise waters where empire once met resistance. sailing as Spirit Antigua's reputation as the sailing capital of the Caribbean isn't just marketing, it's legacy. Each year, the island hosts Antigua Sailing Week, one of the premier regattas in the world. First launched in 1967, it attracts hundreds of sailors, from seasoned racers to weekend cruisers, who compete in a dazzling display of skill, speed, and tradition. With colorful spinnakers billowing over aquamarine waters, the event is as much a cultural festival as it is a sporting competition. For locals, sailing is more than a sport. It's a rite of passage. Children grow up watching their elders tie knots and read the wind. Fishing boats dot the horizon before dawn, crewed by families who have learned to interpret the sea like a second language. There's pride in this relationship. The sea teaches patience. It rewards resilience. And in a region where land has long been contested, water often represents a kind of freedom. Barbuda, sanctuary of stillness. To sail north to Barbuda is to sail into silence. The island is just 30 miles from Antigua, but it feels worlds away. Low-lying and largely undeveloped, Barbuda's coastline stretches out in pale pink sands and sheltered coves. The rhythm here slows. The star of this northern sanctuary is the Codrington Lagoon National Park, home to the frigate bird sanctuary, one of the largest colonies in the Western Hemisphere. During mating season, thousands of male frigate birds inflate their scarlet throat pouches like signal lanterns, creating an otherworldly display against the mangrove canopy.